So, I've never really spoken before in front of a group of very hungry overeaters. I'm going to hide everything fleshy. We are very lucky to have Larry Kay here tonight. Am I too close to the mic? Is that why it's doing that? Okay. We're very lucky to have Larry Kay, who's traveled bazillion miles, or at least a few hundred thousand or something, all the way from back east to come and join us tonight. He is a person who is immersed in recovery. And the most spiritual thing he says that he does is to carry the message. What we'd like to do, to give you an idea, is we're going to ask him to come and speak to us before we get our food. He can fill us with his spiritual inspiration.
You're fired!
It's kind of a tough room right now. But we're going to ask him to come fill us with inspiration, and then we're going to have some food. So, Larry, please come on up and tell us about yourself.
Boy, what an introduction there. Oh, my goodness. Okay, monkey. Inspire, right? I'm Larry Kay. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm from Chicago. Hi, everyone. So, I need to share with you a text that I got that I think is really important that I want to share with you. It was from my daughter. I have one daughter, one child. Dad, hope you're having a good time. Please deposit money in my Chase account. I'm a real big deal at home, you can tell. I'm a very important man, very important man, yeah. So, you know, this is what's really great about this is, again, what an opportunity for us to recognize that life is not going to follow my script, right? You know, we have the fire drill and whatever happens. And, you know, once again, these are things that I would eat over, absolutely. And I did. You know, I ate over these things again and again. And I was restless, and I was irritable, and I was discontent, and it didn't take much. And I remember at my very first convention, so I came into program. My daughter is going to be 24. The one that I got a deposit. She's still in college. She took a year. She worked at, this is, you know, more information you want. But she did a Disney College internship. She lived out in Orlando for a time. She's just a terrific child. And I'm glad that I can be an engaged dad now because I was really emotionally detached. I was present, but I wasn't all there, you know. And thank goodness that I came into program when she was only 4 and a half. So she doesn't know that guy. She has some vestiges, some memories, but she doesn't know the guy that I was. I'm going to share a little bit about who I was. You know, we kind of have a way that we share this. By the way, I want to mention that I mentioned that I'm recovered. And I would admit that, boy, oh, boy, that's, oh, really, Mr. Big Shot, you're recovered. You've got everything. You're cured. Is that what you're saying? That's what I heard. No, I'm not cured of anything. I'm recovered. I'm in a state of being recovered. And it's backed up by what the big book is, you know, I lovingly refer to as the big book, but it's the this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is what got me well. And I'm not here to sell any more books for AA, or I'm not here to advocate. I just have to share my truth and what enabled me to have a spiritual awakening. Synonymous with personality change, spiritual transformation, whatever you would call it, the very essence of the program was designed. Its very nature was designed so that we can gain access, bless you, that we can gain access to a power greater than ourselves. And all the while, I thought that food was my problem. I was sure that food was my problem because I'll mention to you, back to my daughter, when she was 5, of course, I'm you know, divorced at that point, separated. And when she was 5, I decided to take a road trip with my daughter. And actually, she might have been a little bit older at this point, but I decided to take a road trip. And where do you think I went? We are going to Hershey, Pennsylvania. Where else does a compulsive reader go, right? And I mentioned it to you because we had a lovely time in Hershey, Pennsylvania, just me and my daughter. And we did it was a road trip, you know, and we had a wonderful time. And while we were there, one of the things that she brought home was a big chocolate Hershey's Kiss, you know, like the pound solid you can imagine, right? And we got back home, and of course she's going back to her mom's. I remember that distinctly, and we got back to my place, and she said she knew at that age. She said, Dad, I remember it like it was yesterday. I said, Dad, please don't. Can I leave this here? You know, don't. Beth, it's fine. Daddy will not eat your Hershey's Kiss. And I meant it when I said that. I meant it. I'm seeing some waving in the back. I didn't know if that's because, can you hear me in the back or not? Oh, you saw your friend. Hey! They were just waving to a friend. Usually when someone's in the back and they're like, I think they can't hear me or something, but no, they were waving to a friend. Okay. So back to my daughter in this, and I meant it. I wasn't kidding that no, it's fine, honey. When you come back, this will be here. And it wasn't there. And what I thought, like many of you that have had children's Halloween candy or this, I know all about it because I did the same things, is I meant it and I picked it up and I thought I would replace it. But you couldn't find precisely what, you know, this was, it had she remembered, it had a special stamp, you know, from Hershey. So there was no replacing it. And I had to face my daughter and she, you know, and to some people, you might look at him and say, well, but it's a big deal. You know, it's a child. And, you know, it was a big deal because it was a breach of trust. And she remembered that. And she still remembers that today. The difference is she's a beautiful, lovely young lady, but she has not had to grow up with a father that she can depend. I'm very predictable in a good way. You know what I mean? I show up. I'm not perfect. But she hasn't had to chase after my validation or my love. And that's some of the great, you know, well, I could talk to you about my abstinence date. I can tell you about that. I can tell you about being 100 pounds heavier. I can show you pictures if you're here and you want to see all that. That's fine. You want to know that I'm the real deal. That's fine. Happy to do it. But I'd like to tell you the date, which I can't remember, when I could show up for my daughter, when I can show up in a relationship. I'd like to tell you the date when I stopped with the victimization, because I'll tell you about some of my past, and I was victimized in some ways, but I was going to hold those resentments, and I was going to polish them like silver, and I was going to take them to my grave, and I was going to drink the poison that was eating me up inside, and I was expecting you to die, and that's how I lived. And I ate, and I ate, and I ate, and I couldn't stop eating. So today, and I'm going to back up, and I'm going to get into some of the steps and so forth, but I really wanted, you know, I do not want to share Larry's opinions. I don't want to share Larry's opinions with you. Because Larry's opinions almost got Larry killed. I'm quite sure they will kill you. So we probably should stay away from Larry's opinions. And we probably should stick to what's in our literature and stick to what this program is so we can build it on a canvas, build your recovery on a canvas of truth rather than a canvas of falsehood, because that's what I did for a number of years. I don't know many people that come to Overeaters Anonymous on a winning streak, right? I did not get here on a roaring winning streak. I got here like you did, to some extent, on a losing streak of some kind. We all have our narrative. I looked tremendous on paper when I was 100 pounds heavier. I went all the way in school, as far as I can go. I earned a PhD. Like I said, I'm a very important man. I just want you to know how just how important I am. But the reality was I kept assassinating the character of others, sometimes to their face, sometimes in my own mind. And really, what's the difference? And I lied when the truth would have served me better. And I ate, and I ate, and I ate. And because there was nothing like an Oreo cookie or a Kit Kat bar or something to numb me out or a slice of pizza, which I never had one slice of pizza. I never had one Oreo cookie unless it was the last one available. And I ate because, and I think what I want to convey to you, this is the most spiritual, you know, there's no spiritual part of the program. There is, if you're new, there is not a spiritual part of the program. The whole program is spiritual by its very essence and very design, is it not? The entire program. Now, you don't have to treat it that way. We are not against religion, but we are not for religion. We are neutral about religion, about theology. So we're not here to, I'm not here to preach to you. If it comes across that way, my apologies, but I'm not here. If you are an atheist, you are welcome here. If you are agnostic, you are welcome here. Jew, Christian, Muslim, you know, anything in between, you're welcome here. The only desire for membership, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively, right? Now, if you want recovery, there's some actions you're going to have to take. Indeed, there were some actions that I had to take. But I could sit my butt in a chair and I can come. You know, they said meeting makers make it. And they lied to me because I made lots of meetings. And I ate after the meetings. I'd go to 3 meetings on a Saturday and I would eat. And I meant it when I said I'm not going to eat. And I thought that was an insurance policy. And I was certain that I was not going to eat. And then I would, because I was an expert at stopping. I could stop. I've stopped thousands of times in my life. I just couldn't stay stopped. And today I can, by the grace of God, the grace of my higher power in this program, these 12 steps, I can stay stopped, and I'm no longer holding my breath underwater. So one of the things that I want to talk about is somebody... Well, I'm going to share a quick story, and then I'll get into more. I do want to get into some of the big book, because that is what got me well. I cannot deny that. If I'm delusional, I'll address that. But here's what my delusion looks like. I have not found it necessary to compulsively overeat in about 16 years, happily, peacefully. Thanks. Thank you for noticing God's handiwork. Yeah, that God did that for me. That's God's handiwork. I work some steps. I don't want to minimize working the steps. I don't want to diminish the importance of working the steps, but I had to work the steps. God effectuated the change in me. I can't prove that to you. I'm not intending to prove that to you. I'm just telling you that I have not found it necessary to compulsively overeat in that time, and I've done so happily, peacefully, in the midst of the storm, because you know what? The storm is either in your life right now or it's on its way. It's in your life right now or it's on its way. What kind of a nasty thing is that to say, right? Well, it's called the human condition. There's some universals. That's one of them. The storm. Usually I add an expletive prior to that word. The bleep storm, fill in the blank, is either in your life right now or it's on its way. My dad died at a certain point when I was in this recovered state. I guess the analogy I would use is the state of being recovered is sort of like, it's a bad analogy, but cancer being in remission. So that if I was, that I'm not suffering from any of the effects of compulsive overeating. It's in remission. Is about the best way I could describe it. Prior to that, that was not the case. I remember what it was like distinctly to be an Overeaters Anonymous among lovely, nurturing, beautiful people, made lots of good friends, but being stark raving sober, stark raving abstinent. The monkey was off my back, but the circus was in town, right? I put the food down. The monkey was off my back, but rest assured, the circus was always in town. And so I know what it's like to be white-knuckled abstinent. We have people in Overeaters Anonymous, some. I don't stand in judgment of anybody. I'm just another person. There's no hierarchy in Overeaters Anonymous. There's no self-anointed ones in Overeaters Anonymous. We are all, there's no special ones. You don't earn your stripes by time served. I learned that pretty quickly. It's not, when is it going to be my turn? When is it my turn? I've been in meetings. I've gone to many meetings. You tell me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, I'm going to do better. You tell me to journal. You tell me to read whatever I read. It's yes, sir, yes, sir. All the tools, I'll do it. And I continue to eat. Something I want to say that I, you know, may disturb, I don't know, but it's reality. You know, we cannot talk about 50% rates of recovery in Overeaters Anonymous. We can't talk about 25%. We can't talk about 10%. We are lucky if we are getting 2% rates of recovery of people, not people holding their breath underwater that have lost weight or gained weight, as the case may be, but I'm talking about people who are sober, abstinent, 100% happily and peacefully. I mentioned this morning, we come by the hundreds and we leave by the 99s. That's the reality. I don't mean to disturb. It's not me. This is World Service. We know what the rates of recovery are. Now, this room, it's beautiful to see people here. But there are, you know, we are as sick as our secrets. And my secrets, I know I came to a convention and I thought, at least at the convention, I'm safe and protected. At the convention, oh, no. Because I remember a convention where there was a fire alarm. It's there was in the hotel, okay, and it was a big convention. And I'm telling you, when I walked out, it was a beautiful sunny day, and I had no intention of stopping at a bakery on the way back to my hotel. That was not part of my plan. My sponsor was there. I was surrounded by other people that were, you know, people that were trying to do the same thing. And I snuck into a bakery, and that was not my intention. And I did it, and I hid, and then I remember, and I ate, and I ate, and I ate. And I remember calling my sponsor, and now you don't do this, but I did this. I lied through omission. I wasn't feeling very good. I wasn't feeling very good. That's the truth. And I think I need to drive back home. And that's what I did. So I know, statistically speaking, there are people in this room that are just like me. The food's up in your room. It's in your purse. It's somewhere. It's in your car. I know that. How do I know that? Do I have special? No. I was you. At a convention. And you know. You know, people, you see people looking and so forth, and it's disturbing, and it's a little bit, it hits close to home, and maybe it does or maybe it doesn't. And I'm not being accusatory. I'm just saying that was my experience, because I was not willing to be entirely abstinent, because I was not beaten. This disease had not yet beaten me into a state of reasonableness. The disease had not yet beaten me into a state of reasonableness. I don't care if Bill Wilson or Roseanne would have shown up at my door. Larry, we're here. No. Larry, I wrote the book. No, I really wrote the book. I'm your guy. Or Roseanne. No. I started this, Larry. I was in L.A. I started it. Here I am. I'll sponsor you. It wouldn't have worked. Because only the desperate are going to be willing to go through the uncomfortability, both emotional and physical uncomfortability, of putting their food down 100% prior to embarking on this practical program of spiritual action. Only the desperate and dying. It's okay. This can be a social gathering for you, and that's okay. It's great. I love a social gathering. But we have people in Overeaters Anonymous, you know, that are still drunk. And they are lovely, good people. They are wonderful people. And they, like me, they don't intend to be, but they are. And they have a head full of OA and a belly full of food. They have a head full of OA for years, maybe decades, and they are exercising themselves to death. They are using compensatory behaviors in which to stay on top of this, and itself will run riot. I know because I was that same way. So I know it's true. Can you imagine if we were at Alcoholics Anonymous, a meeting, and we're in the room here, or Narcotics Anonymous, and here I am up speaking my truth, and you come up to talk to me later, and you smell distinctly alcohol coming from my breath. At the very least, there would be, in my vernacular in psychology, there would be cognitive dissonance, right? His walk-walk doesn't match his talk-talk very well, does it? Right? Yeah, cognitive dissonance. And if we were at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, if you could have a charming behavior, you could speak eloquently, and if you saw me in the stairwell wrapping a band around my arm, not as much as I used to, mind you, just a little bit to take the edge off, that would be an absurdity. And at the very least, you would be disappointed. Now, is it such a stretch to say that in many OA meetings, we have people leading the meetings who are drunk? Beautiful, lovely people, not judging them. But look at it this way. See, I know people that have died in this disease. Perhaps you do too. Now, my friend Jen, she mentioned earlier, I heard her, but I knew, you know, she had a friend that died in this disease. And on her death certificate, it did not say compulsive overeater. Right? It said something else. Nor the multiple friends. And I've had, you know, I knew a rabbi, religious person, beautiful, lovely guy, dead. And he's never coming back. Not in this realm. Never coming back. Now, I hope I'm not spoiling your dinner. I don't mean to disturb too much. But this is a deadly disease. And I can't help but to mention, you know, some of the aspects because I know people that have died in this disease. How are we, Liz, do we have to mention more tables going to get their food? A tapping technique. Tap, tap, tap. Okay, good. Who's the, you get, it's like, yeah, who gets the lucky ticket, right? Who's next? So I'm here today to share, you know, what got me well, which was following these. Someone brought this book alive for me. They brought it off the pages because it's antiquated, it's misogynistic. I think that means sexist, something like that. I don't know all my words, but I've read it somewhere. And it talks about alcohol. That's not my issue. What does this have to do with me? I taught for many years. I taught in college, various psychology courses and so forth, as I was eating myself to death, mind you. But we had textbooks, and, you know, I remember like an introduction to psychology class. We were on like the 14th edition. And why are there new editions? Because new information replaces old information, new research, right? It makes sense. This book has not changed fundamentally the first 164 pages. Now, there may be a historian out there that'll say, oh, yes, you know. But fundamentally, the first 164 pages have not changed. And I cannot deny that this book got me well. Not perfectly well. I'm human. I'll never rise above the level of a human being. But I am nothing like, nobody was looking for me. Nobody was looking for me. Would it shock you to know that I had greater ambitions in life than to be involved in Overeaters Anonymous? Would that come as a shock or a surprise to people? I had other ambitions for myself. Yet this is the most beautiful thing that I could possibly do, is to service and self-sacrifice for others. But I didn't know that. I came with my hands out, as we all do, right? But today, it's such a beautiful thing to be able to see someone's eyes light up, you know, to maybe to have hope, you know, and it's not, it has nothing to do with IQ. It has nothing to do with socioeconomics, race, gender, nothing. This is available to anyone. The problem is you ever play the game of telephone? See how I made that segue? It didn't make any sense to me either. If you ever play the game telephone, you know, I say something over here, and I go over to Jim over here, right? And then it works its way around the room, and then it finally comes all the way to the end over here, and you stand up. What happens to that message when she repeats the message? Changes, doesn't it? Now, that's something that will happen in a room of 150 to 200 people in 10 minutes. How about among hundreds of thousands, millions of people over some 85 years? Do you suppose the message has changed a bit? The message has gotten watered down by well-intentioned people. So we hear things like, keep coming back. And we want you to come back. But when I heard that, take what you want, leave the rest, I'll leave most of it. Thank you. And I left most of it. Only the things that were palatable to me, but I left most of it. And we hear things like, you know, I heard things like, you know, wait for the miracle to happen, meeting makers make it, 90 meetings in 90 days, put the plug in the jug, that's an AA term, but, you know, put the food down, shut up, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. You know, you'll run into this person, this old timer person. And the reality is that when I finally work these steps in sequence, I think that means in order. When I worked them in order, right? Actually, the transformation, and I had to do it abstinently. Now, what the heck? I know that wasn't there an abstinence discussion? There was probably a lot. There's usually, wherever I go in the country, food plans, abstinence, those generate, you know, there's lots of people that come to those things. Let's see if we can drill down a little bit so we can get clear on it. It may surprise you. The doctor's opinion in the big book was written by Dr. Silkworth. And Dr. Silkworth wrote two letters when Bill Wilson was starting this program. And I'm not going to read them to you, but I'm just going to read something that lays it out pretty clear, because they talked about two things that we have an allergy of the body. Wait a minute, I don't break out in hives when I eat Oreos. What do you mean allergy? An allergy is really, the way they defined it, is an abnormal physical reaction. An abnormal physical reaction. When I ate Oreo cookies and Kit Kat bars and pizza and all these different things, I had an abnormal physical reaction. Physiologically, I bet you if you would have put a functional magnetic resonance imaging on my brain here, you would have seen it light up with excitement in a way that was abnormal. Not the norm. I bet my pupils would have dilated. Even anticipation of ordering the pizza would calm me down. Can anyone relate? Right? I just need to know what's on its way. I need to know that I'm going to have it tomorrow. That began to bring that sense of ease and comfort. There's a physiological change. In the doctor's opinion, it says the following. You've probably read it before, or maybe this is the first time you've heard of it. In the Dr. Silkworth's second letter, I'm going to respectfully change a couple of words that won't change the meaning. Men and women eat essentially because they like the effect produced by their binge substance, their alcoholic food substance. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, it's harmful to them, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. See, to them, their compulsive overeating lives seem the only normal one. And they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few bites. Bites, by the way, which they see other people taking with impunity. I think that means without consequence. They see other people around them seemingly without consequence when they take those bites. And after they have succumbed, like Larry did with the convention story, after they've succumbed, they pick up the food to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat again. And this is repeated over and over. I always like to add another over and over. And unless this person can experience what? An entire psychic change. That's synonymous with spiritual awakening. That's synonymous, I think that means they mean the same thing. That's synonymous with personality change, spiritual awakening, spiritual transformation. Bill used lots of different ways to describe the same thing. Change. Inwardly restructured. Change. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. I'm glad there was an other hand. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, hopeless, who had so many problems they despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself, herself, easily able to control their desire for their alcoholic foods. The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules, that's the 12 steps. Bill in college was taught not to use, the good writers don't use the same words over and again to describe, so he would use different ways to follow a few simple rules, to follow the 12 steps. The tools are the handrails. The tools, I'm not crapping on the tools are critical. But the tools were never designed to get you well. The tools as handrails were designed to support you while you work the program of spiritual action in the 12 steps that will allow you to cross the bridge to freedom so that the obsession is eradicated. The obsession is gone. It's driven out. And that, I believe that people in 12-step programs, there are people walking around in Overeaters Anonymous like myself where by the grace of their higher power, I say the grace and mercy of God, that's what I believe, and me working the steps in this beautiful fellowship, the obsession was eradicated. So why am I here? If it's eradicated, wouldn't it just make sense that I say, you know, come to my graduation and... you know, I don't need you anymore. Somehow immersed in this program, somehow immersed in these steps, we cultivate a desire. I didn't see it coming. I swear I didn't see it coming. But we cultivate a desire to carry the message. I did not anticipate this. It was unanticipated. And I've met others that feel the same way. Not all of them speak and, you know, carry message to many. Some just, you know, most of us just one-on-one, working intensely with another individual. I was talking to Kate, who spoke so beautifully last night. And we just were talking about just how beautiful it is to see when someone becomes awakened. Because how I became awakened was not a flip the switch awakened. Mine was more like a dimmer switch. Does that make sense to anyone? I became awakened by detaching from the outcome of these steps as best I humanly could. By detaching from the outcome and surrendering by just doing the work. I was pretty sure it was not going to work for me. Because to me, coming in this program, it seemed like group therapy, where we talk about our problems, and in very much a psychoanalytic Freudian way, we process our problems together, we learn from each other, and somehow we can fight for another day to hold our breath underwater. And that's what I believe this was. And I was wrong. Not a little wrong, I was dead wrong. That is not what many people have. And I'm not suggesting that if you've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 10 and 20 and 30 and 40 and 50 years, and if that's like, no, but that's not my experience, yeah, it's rough. Every day is rough. I'm just saying, you know, it's like I mentioned this morning, consider a, I hate to use the word pie, but I talk about food. Consider a pie graph, right? A pie graph. And I mentioned that there's a little slice, tiny little slice of that pie graph. And that's the things that we know that we don't know. The things that we know we don't know. And then there's another little slice, tiny little slice, and that's the things that we don't know that we know. But the vast majority of the pie is the things that we don't know that we don't know. Recovery is about the 12 steps. Overeaters Anonymous, leading to a spiritual awakening, is recovery is all about the things that we don't know that we don't know. I came in here, perhaps like you did, and I thought I knew. I had a crystal ball. I knew what you were thinking. I knew how this works. I could sniff out. I was the master at identifying out. I was the master at identifying out rather than doing what I really needed to do, which was part of surrender, which is identifying in. So when I first read this, I'm not an alcoholic. What does this have to do? People just put down their alcohol. I got to eat. I got to take the tiger out of the cage 3 times a day. In my case, 10 times a day. Tiger comes out of the cage. It's different. Now, I've been to AA meetings. They have a drinking plan. I've seen them. They drink coffee, they drink juice, they drink water, they drink all sorts of things. You'd be amazed at the different things they drink. They just don't drink alcohol. They have a drinking plan. In fact, they would die sooner by not drinking liquid than we would by not eating. Doesn't that make sense? And yet we identify out, and we think we're terminally unique. I know I did. Not you guys, me. No one in this room did that. But I identified out. And I thought, and I looked for the person who was, because I was 100 pounds heavier, but, you know, you didn't have to, it wasn't like looking at Medusa where you had to, you know, I was going to turn you into stone or something. I was like most guys, walking around 100 pounds heavier, you know, bigger gut, no, still, you know, my physical packaging, you know, wasn't crazy, but I was absolutely insane. I could not get back after teaching classes without stopping at a convenience store, at a fast food restaurant. These are quick. I can get my fix quick. I could not. And I used to think to myself, can't I just drive home? I would try that. I would sort of play games with myself. I'm a psychologist after all. I dig deep. I want to peel away the layers of the onion and get to the core. And I thought all the while, well, if you were abused as a child, if your parents were divorced, if you were moved from Chicago to Reseda, California in the third grade, well, you'd eat too. And if you were, you know, I used to steal my dad's cologne because I missed him so much, and I would bring it with me to smell it because you'd eat too. And none of those reasons are why I'm a compulsive overeater. Not a one. Don't you think that for a moment. I'm a compulsive reader merely because I have the twofold nature of the disease, the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. The allergy of the body says that when I pick up an alcoholic food substance, my desire for more gets magnified. My desire for more, when I pick up an alcoholic food substance, my desire for more gets intensified. That's not normal. Have you ever eaten with someone that they actually put their fork down when they want to talk? What's the matter with those people? I never understood it. The celebrity in the room for me was always the food. The people, I never really, you know, I could carry on a conversation. We could do two things at once. But the reality was, it always had a grip on me. And even in Overeaters Anonymous, it had a grip on me when I was not in a recovered state, because I had not been entirely abstinent. I had not worked the steps in sequence. I picked what I wanted and left the rest. I kind of treated it like a salad bar. I'll have a little of this, a little of that, whatever suits me. And I did not follow. I was not desperate. I wasn't desperate. I needed to be beaten into a state of reasonableness. You know who does that? An aggressive sponsor? No, the disease. The disease will convince you, or you'll die. But it won't be on your death certificate. Remember I said it will not. It'll be diabetes. It'll be complications from heart, this and that and the other. But there's two types of deaths. There is the last breath death that we'll all take. But there's a worse death, and that was being dead inside while you're alive, and that's what I felt like. I was like a zombie walking around, and I look good on paper. So the 12 steps treat the obsession. I still have the allergy. Now, I'm going to illustrate for you the difference. And I apologize if you were sitting in this morning when I talked about this, but I'd like to tell the story. My daughter has a peanut allergy. Anyone have a peanut allergy? Or know someone that has a peanut allergy? The physical manifestation of a peanut allergy is throat constriction. I've seen it with my daughter. Her throat closes up to the size of a pinhole, and she will die unless she's treated with an EpiPen, which she has twice in her life for accidental exposure. And then she's fine. She's perfectly fine. Her physical manifestation of that is throat constriction. My physical manifestation is a desire for more of the same food. It happens to me physically. My daughter, when she is exposed to peanuts, she doesn't leave the hospital and drive to the nearest convenience store to get more peanuts. That would be insanity. That would be absurd. She only has one of two components. She has a physical allergy. Nor does she need to go to Peanuts Anonymous. Right? She's never been to Peanuts Anonymous. In fact, I can tell you, there is no Peanuts Anonymous anywhere in the world available or even being planned. Because people that have a food allergy, an abnormal physical reaction, only have one component of two. We are blessed with two. We have an obsession. We have a mental twist, a strange mental twist, they called it, that for some reason, even when we are not ingesting our alcoholic substances, we are driven back at some point to pick it up again and thus trigger the phenomenon of craving. It just said it in the doctor's opinion. We do that over and over and over again. The steps, the 12 steps, treat the obsession, the mental twist. It drives it out. So I still have the allergy, but I'm not waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm not holding my breath underwater because by the grace of God and me working the steps, there was a symbiotic dance. I had to work the steps. I had to row my boat. But rest assured, God, the God of my understanding, removed the obsession. The God of my understanding effectuated a spiritual awakening. And I didn't think that would be possible. And this is not about science. The only part of science, and I'm trained in science, the only part of science is that it can be replicated. And that's it. How do I know that? Because I've seen person after person after person replicate. If they follow the instructions in the text, they will have a spiritual awakening. It's experiential. I'm not saying it's the exact same. It could be the dimmer switch variety. It could be the light switch variety. Let's face it, not everyone in Overeaters Anonymous is a compulsive overeater. Not everyone in Overeaters Anonymous is a compulsive overeater. What? If you are not, there are people that can go into AA because they got a DUI, driving while intoxicated, or they were divorced, or they had a diagnosis of an illness that they better stop drinking. And that information was enough. They never had to work the steps. They came to AA, and they never had to work the steps, and they've been sober for decades. And I would suggest to you that some of them are not alcoholic by the definition. They don't have both the allergy and the obsession. If that makes any rational sense to you whatsoever, why would that not be so with us? Here's the thing. I'm presuming everyone has both the twofold nature, the allergy and the obsession. I'll just grant you that you're here because you have that. But the thing about it is if you are not and you are able to come into Overeaters Anonymous and put the food down and get right-sized, maybe you got to gain weight, maybe you got to lose weight. There's all sorts of different types of people here, right? Whatever it is, but you're a compulsive eater and you had to do that. But you never work the steps, but you've been sober, you've been abstinent for decades. It talks about the classification of the alcoholic here. There's the heavy drinker. There's the heavy eater. I've known some heavy eaters. They look like a duck, they quack like a duck, but they're not a duck. They're heavy. They seem to eat a lot, but they're not a duck. I don't want them sponsoring me because I'll die if they sponsor me. Do you understand? I'll die because they'll tell me, Larry, just put the food down. Go to meetings. Take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. Keep coming back. Hang out. You're golden. And you're not if you have the twofold nature. And I see bewilderment. And that's where I see around the country. I see bewilderment sometimes in faces, which I don't know, maybe means, you know, that, oh, that's a bunch of BS. Or maybe it means that you're thinking. I know that when I was confronted with that reality, it made me think. And that's a good thing. We're a big tent of people, all different ideas. But if I say anything that cannot be squared, at least in this text, don't listen to it. Throw it out. But I would at least ask you, or I would at least empower you to ask your sponsor when they say something, where in our literature, our approved literature, does it say that? Where does it say that? Not in a confrontational sort of way, but just to ask them. And if they say, listen, I'm the sponsor, you're the sponsee, well, you know where you stand there. But if they say, I don't know, well, then you're getting the opinion of an addict. I'm not saying the opinions of addicts are not great. I have a few opinions. I'll be happy to share them out in the parking lot with you. I may have some good ones. I may have some not so good ones. I'll be happy to share. But opinions, here's the thing about opinions. They will not get you well. The opinions of addicts will not get you well. So I think it's the more compassionate thing for me to stick with our literature. I know there's different ways and different approaches and so forth. I'm not suggesting that. There is dignity of choice with food plans. I get that. I was talking to, where's Margaret? Or is it Martha? Who's 45 years? I'm getting your name wrong. There you are, my dear. I'm sorry that I botched your name. Well, we're even because she saw me and she's like, what's your name? And I'm like, oh, I'm Larry. Oh, you're the guy that's speaking. She's so great. She's so humble. I love hearing her speak. She, it was interesting. She was talking about, again, in her presentation, so I'm not, giving away just a personal conversation, just that this is how it was back in Chicago when you started. And they, back then, 15 years, right? You're saying OA at that point was about 15 years old. It was an adolescent period, just like AA experienced, figuring things out. They handed you a gray sheet, right? But there were 100 to 150 people come into meetings, regular meetings. What I didn't share with her is I mentioned a good mentor of mine, Harlan. Some of you may know Harlan. He's from Chicago originally. But I think you moved here before he even started coming to meetings there. Yeah, in Chicago. But then he moved to Phoenix. Why do I mention Harlan? Because, you know, he was one that said to me, he said, Larry, I used to come to Swedish Covenant Hospital in Chicago. This guy knows addresses. He's full of facts, F-A-C-T-E-S, facts. He's full of them. And he would say, yeah, he'd give me the address. And I used to go in. There was 150, 200 people. And I shared with him a couple, 3 years ago that meeting is gone. Wow. It's gone. Swedish Covenant Hospital. They may have tried to start a new one, but they went from 150 to 200 people, and the meeting essentially closed down. And I was going to share that with you, but we just had a little time. I really appreciated our conversation. But that's sad, because this is a killing, baffling disease. So one of the, you know, there's some things in the big book. When I call myself recovered, I want to say that the very first page, it says the story of how, who reads the first page? Like, who reads this? I never did. I'm aging myself when I talk about Cliff Notes, but that, you know, like the abbreviated version, like who reads, this guy cracked open the book and from the first page in the table of contents, really? And he says the story of how many thousands of men and women have what? Recovered from alcoholism. And then when you go over to the, then he drew my attention to the forward to the first edition. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics, here's the squiggly lines, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. They're not going to be vague about it. That'd be a real joke if they were like, well, like when you get to the fourth step, you know, where it says, when you do your third step affirmative declaration, then we're not going to launch out in anything. We're going to meander. We're going to meander, and we're going to sort of contemplate a fourth step. No, it says we're going to launch out like a missile. That word launch was very purposeful. We're going to launch out on a course of vigorous action. Steps 1, 2, and 3 get us right with God. Not perfectly right with your higher power, but steps 1, 2, and 3 get us right with God. Steps 4 through 7 get us right with ourselves. Steps 8 and 9 get us right with others. And then steps 10, 11, and 12 keep us right with God, with ourselves, and with others. There's a sequence to this. That is not how you have to work this program. But it is the way the founders of AA established it as a spiritual program of action. Steps 1, 2, and 3 are the preparation steps. Here's the interesting thing. When you come in, step 1, they say, okay, can you own up the fact that you're powerless over your food, your alcoholic foods, and that your life is unmanageable? It's a little hyphen there. They're kind of linked together. Yeah, you know, I can conclude that, I guess, that I'm powerless. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't powerless. And yeah, there's some unmanageability in my life. Check. I got that. I can raise my hand to that. Okay. Step 2. Do you think it's possible, Larry? Is it possible? However minute a chance, is it possible that a higher power, that God could restore you to sanity? Do you think that's even possible? And I said, highly improbable. But I'll concede possible. He said, okay, you're done with step 2. Now, you can complicate step 2 if you want to. You're more than most people do. They want to have their whole thing figured out. They want to have it all figured out. You can do that, but it's not necessary. And history shows that if we don't work these steps like our hair is on fire, bless you, that if we don't work these steps like our hair is on fire with that sense of urgency, we're building our recovery on a canvas of lies rather than a canvas of truth. We need to work the steps in sequence as only a human being can, imperfectly. And we in Overeaters Anonymous, we're perfectionists. We're highly accomplished in many areas of our lives and our families and business and whatever it is. And so we bring perfectionism, and you'll never rise above the level of a human being. So the steps were never intended to be done perfectly. but they were intended to be done quickly and in sequence. I'm going to have you travel back with me. Let's say it's 1940, and you're a sick and suffering and dying alcoholic of the hopeless variety. And you venture into a room of AA, and here's what you could have expected. You would have been welcomed. You would have been introduced to all the people in the room. You would have been linked up with a sharing partner. They didn't use the word sponsor back then. They used the word sharing partner, kind of synonymous with sponsor. That sharing partner may only be sober for a matter of a couple of months, brought to this recovered state as a result of the steps. And they're going to link you up with a sharing partner. And here's what that sharing partner would have told you in 1940. They would have said, tonight, for the next 90 minutes or so, we're going to go through the first three steps. We're going to talk about what your problem is in step one, what the solution to your problem is in step two, and how you're going to bring that solution to light, making the affirmative declaration in step three to get on with the work that will give you freedom, which is 4 through 9. And then, if you come back next week, we're going to go through steps 4. I'm going to help you with that because a lot of those early gutter drunks, they couldn't even write. They had delirium tremens. They were trembling. So I know I'm a student of history with that. They would write for them. And they would go through a personal moral inventory, and they would educate them about steps 4. And then the following week, they would have them give it away in steps 5. And then 6, 7, they would go through 6 and 7. They would come back the next week and start their list to go out and make restitution for harms that they had done, that they had identified, at which time they would become a recovered alcoholic, and then maintenance and grow through steps 10, 11, and 12, what they had been so graciously given, mercifully given. And they would be a sharing partner for someone else. That is indeed what happened for the first 25 years of AA, and the rates of recovery were astonishing. They were remarkable. The rates of recovery were absolutely remarkable. Now, let's fast forward to 2019. And in 2019, you come into OA, to a meeting. They may or may not welcome you. But most will welcome you. I've been to a lot of meetings. Most will welcome you. They may or may not introduce you to all the people there. They may or may not talk about sponsorship. They may talk about the 12 steps. They may not. If we consider that topical meetings outnumber literature meetings, i.e. the big book or OA literature, by something like 7 to 1, recognize that they're not going to necessarily be talking about these things. And so that person is going to be like me. They come into the room, and I'm going to sit way in the back close to the door, and I'm going to sit my butt down and not know what the hell is going on. I may identify with something said, I may not, and I'm going to leave. And that's what happens oftentimes, not in Oregon or Washington or Montana, but elsewhere in the country. That's what's going on. So unless you're in Oregon or Washington or Montana or wherever else, you know, Colorado, that's what's going on. And the rates of recovery, as I'd mentioned, are not very good. You know, it says in the big book, it gives us the instruction for step one in the chapter called More About Alcoholism. The second full paragraph, it says, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. Now tell me, how was I conceding anything when I was still eating? What did I concede? Now, I was trying to live better. This isn't about morals. This isn't necessarily about values or any of that stuff. But I had not conceded to my innermost self because I was still eating. Some of my, not as much, and I had started to right size. My physical packaging began to change, but rest assured, I was still eating. So I would offer to you that I had not taken the first step because I had not conceded to my innermost self that I was a compulsive overeater because I was still eating. I was still looking for my self-will to take care of it. I'll find another way. So I really had not taken step one. You know, the book goes on and it gives, it says on page 60, many of us exclaimed, what an order. I can't go through with this. Don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. It didn't say, don't be discouraged. Nobody has been able to maintain anything like perfect abstinence. That's not what it says. And yet I read it that way. You snuck this in my book. I swear you did. The first 1,000 times I read it, it wasn't there. You must have snuck it in there. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to their abstinence. That's how I read that. No, to the principles, the steps, no one does it perfectly. An alcoholic has to put their alcohol down 100%. You have to be willing to go through a period of physical and emotional uncomfortability, be desperate enough, Kate, is that fair? To be desperate enough to put that down, and then quickly embark on this practical program of action. Now, the spiritual awakening I had is of the educational variety. I did not, you know, hear trumpets and see angels. None of that for me. Maybe you did, and that's great, but I didn't. But nonetheless, when I finally was willing to concede to my innermost self that I was a compulsive overeater, and thus I had to put the food down. I had to put the food down. And when I did that, and in the midst of my horrible suffering and uncomfortability at times, not all the time, I could diet and sometimes feel like maybe I had a spiritual awakening. I feel pretty good today. I think I could keep eating like this. I remember going on the Atkins diet. That was like, are you kidding? I think I could do this for the rest of my life. Until I couldn't, right? My brain hadn't changed, right? So, and I'm not knocking any particular food. I'm just saying my experience with that. So the thing about it is when I finally put the food down and worked the steps in sequence imperfectly, but quickly, like my hair was on fire, I had a spiritual transformation of some type within about 2 months. I know that because I know the dates when that happened. And I remember calling my sponsor and saying, something's happened to me. It sounded like what Bill said to Dr. Silkworth, something's happened to me. And I remember my sponsor saying, okay, just let's not get ahead of ourselves here. And he talked to me about a pink cloud and all this kind of stuff. But something must have happened to me. It felt like different than dieting with group support. I know how to diet with group support. That's different. That's what we do in OA. We diet with group support. We hold our breath underwater. We fight for one more day of abstinence. And we think that that's what this is. That's all this is. How do I know? Because I see other people that are fighting for one more day, but they've got years and they're just good fighters. That's not like armor up for one more day. You know? No, that's not what there's so much more that is available to people. So when I was able to work the steps, then this word says in how it works, rarely, boy, they fought over that word rarely. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has what? Thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And so as I lingered in OA, I thought, that's me. Just accept it. They talk about acceptance. Accept that you're just one of the ones that are constitutionally incapable or one of the mental, well, they even said that, you know, those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, like me, many of those people do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And I did, you know, and so I will tell you, I have yet, not it's not rarely, this is just my truth, I have yet to meet someone in Overeaters Anonymous, who has thoroughly followed this path that has not been brought to a state, this recovered state. I have not met them yet. I have not met them. The bad news is most people that I know in Overeaters Anonymous, lovely people, wonderful people, these are my friends. I love Overeaters Anonymous. Most will not thoroughly follow this path. They're just not desperate enough yet. The disease hasn't done its work yet. And all the while they think, as I did, that no, but if you knew my life, if you knew my story, no, Larry, I'm bankrupt financially. I lost my home. No, Larry, I've had cancer. I lost a loved one, a child. Do you know the first guy that I saw at a convention when I was brand new, I was a much bigger guy, and I saw this guy up on a stage just like this. It was a room just like this. And he was 500 pounds, and his physical packaging was different. And that was impressive, but that wasn't what it most impressed me. That was not what, I'm being honest, because what most impressed me about that guy was when he talked about 4 years earlier, with his two children, one child had a fever and went into the hospital and he died. And that's a horror when you have kids. That's not how things are supposed to happen. It's not the order of things, right? The child died. It was meningitis or something. And he was still in the program. He was still carrying the message. He was still in this recovered state of being, not cured, but in a recovered state of being. And I know him to this day. His wife now, who never, you know, because he was morbidly obese. He met his wife, and she was morbidly obese. And she never, you know, she and the surviving child never wanted any part of the program. And she recently passed away at a pretty young age. Everything seems younger to me now. I'm going to be 54. But he was abstinent through that. Now, that may sound, like, wouldn't anybody say, look, if you lose a child, we get it. I mean, what a horror. We understand if you're off the rails. But I'm seeing, and why is he still abstinent? Because the obsession was eradicated. It had nothing to do. My dad passed away. The obsession was eradicated. I did what normal people do. I grieved, but I didn't want the food. I didn't have to fight my emotions. Harlan talks about one of the problems being the normal buildup of human emotion. And as a psychologist, I get it. The normal buildup of human emotion. We cannot live, people like us cannot live with the normal buildup. You know, a normal person, and I'm stealing from him here, this is the only place in the world, Overeaters Anonymous, where you can steal from others, freely steal, right? Practice, immerse yourself, and take anything that you want, you know? And this is one of the things he said. He said, normal people, when human emotions build up, they take the dog for a walk. They call a friend. They make love. They read a book. And then their emotions dissipate. That's what normal people do. They grieve at times too. Yeah, that's what normal people do. Not so with us. When the buildup of human emotion, we pick up a Kit Kat bar and we get 9 beautiful seconds of bliss. We numb out for about 9 seconds, faster than heroin. But we repeat it, as I did, over and over and over. So it's not like one and then I get 9 seconds, okay, I'm good for till next month. No, I'm doing it. Remember it said? That's our norm. We just eat and eat and eat. Numb and numb and numb and numb and numb. Num-nums. I just made that up. We just numb out over and over and again. So it seems the only normal way. And then if we can't, we're restless, irritable, and discontent. See, I didn't understand that these steps would work. And frankly, I didn't think. And when I got to the point where this person brought it alive for me, I had 8 sponsors in the first 5 years. Being in OA. Some fired me. I, in my infinite, you know, assassinated character, and fired some. And I just, you know, I lied when the truth would. I prayed that my sponsors, different sponsors, wouldn't ask me if I'm entirely abstinent because I would have to lie. Now, you told me I needed to have a sponsor, so I always wanted one of those. It was all about me. It was all about the committee. In the big book, it talks about the root of our troubles. What is the root of our troubles? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our troubles. It's driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion and all sorts of things. I don't have a good memory, but I could quote it because I practice this. I just practice it. And guess what? Here's a secret. Don't tell anybody else. When you start to teach it, you own it. But don't tell anybody, because I don't want to give this away. You know, you'll stop having me try to teach it. But I'm the winner here because, in a very good way, because I can be selfless and give it away and retain it. It's a 12-step program, not 11 steps. It's 12 steps, so I have to carry it. But I get to, you know, I get to stay on this beam of recovery. Thank God I get to. But that normal buildup of human emotion, you know, and that's what gets us, and the steps begin to treat that. If I thought therapy would work, I'm not knocking therapy. I'm a big fan. I'm a big believer, right? I'm a big fan of that. I'm not knocking it at all. So if you're in it, you're involved in that. I'm not knocking that. These are outside issues about that. I'm saying, but if I thought OA is about the processing and discussing and contemplating to feel better so that we can go out and hold our breath underwater for one more day. If I thought that that's what all this is, then I would tell you, I would say that that's all this is. It's a big zero. It's a big zero. Just all you are, all this is you coming and sharing the mess and walking out and fighting and armoring up to stay out of the food for one more day, and then doing what I did and lying to sponsors when the truth would serve me better. I prayed they wouldn't ask me, are you entirely abstinent? And if they did, I would lie. Or I would tell on myself, as some people here do too. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Not in Oregon, but other states. They the next morning, a week later, out of guilt, we unburden ourselves and we, that's what I did. And they would tell me, the compassionate ones would tell me, well, don't beat yourself up. And I wouldn't. Because we don't want that. That doesn't work. And they were compassionate and they were loving and they were tolerant, many of them. And some of them were, you know, irritable and I understand. We're only human. But today I know that the best sharing partner I can be. Remember what I talked about in AA? The best sponsor, if you will. We need a Sherpa. Can you imagine if you had a Sherpa? You're gonna go to the Himalayas, and you get to the foot of the Himalayas, and the Sherpa has lived there and knows every piece of equipment, and they know the terrain, the maps, they have everything, and you're all set to climb Mount Everest. Any last questions, the Sherpa asks. You can't think of anyone, but you don't want to feel dumb. You want to ask something. Have you ever been up to the mountain? Look, I have been here. I have maps. My grandfather has been to the top. My father, my brothers. Yes, but have you ever been there? As I said, I've lived here my whole life. I've been around here. I have knowledge. I can help. We can't give away something we don't have, right? We can try to. But you're only going to give away something you have. We can't give away something we don't have. If your walk doesn't match your talk, what are we giving away? I'm not advocating that we're, some will walk away and be like, oh, I'm glad you brought that guy in. Thanks a lot, Liz. Nice job. He just disturbed me. And I really was hoping to be entertained and now I'm feeling worse. Isn't this over? Is this about hope? And this is the hope. The more compassionate thing for me today is that people stop dying from this disease. You will die, but stop dying from this disease. Jen's friend, gone, never coming back. Fair, Jen? People that I know, never coming back. And they've left loved ones. And we think it's a, you know, you come in and you hear this is a selfish program. So let me get this straight. My problem, the root of my problem is selfishness. And in order to solve that and keep from dying, I need a selfish program? No, I need a selfless program. This program is selfless. We move from a me-centered consciousness to a God-centered consciousness. I don't like that word. Okay, I'll change it. We move from a Larry-centered consciousness to an other-centered consciousness. That's what the steps are intended to do, is to move us away. We can't stop thinking. I used to think selfish. No, I'm not selfish. I provide. I do nice things. I'm altruistic. I'm involved in different things, I thought. And they said, no, you're misunderstanding the word selfish in the context of this program. The word selfish was not morally bereft. I don't know what bereft means, but it seems like it works. Morally bankrupt. That, you know what I mean? Like no. The selfishness just means I can't stop thinking. I'm self-absorbed. Even when I'm thinking kind things about you, all I can think about is the committee. Me, myself, and I. That's all I can think about. The steps are designed to move us from a me-centered consciousness to an other-centered consciousness, a higher power-centered consciousness. Dare I say, a God-centered consciousness. Where you don't have to fight to be in that centered consciousness. That's what the steps are designed to do. And when that happens, as the result of the steps, then we have a message to carry. And you can't help but carry it. I mean, look around, you know, think of people who've been around, and can't you see recovery? Can't you hear recovery? What if you heard me, and then you met me, and I was 400 pounds? You'd probably feel sad for me. I know people here. You'd probably feel compassionate, but wouldn't there be something off? He sounds, you know, and he's been helpful, but his walk clearly is not matching his talk. Now, let me turn it around. What if I was 80 pounds? Right? And I'm speaking, and I'm eloquent, and I'm speaking, and I have all this knowledge, but you see that I'm dying. For the anorexics and the bulimics, they know what I'm talking about. The thinnest person in the room is not the healthiest, mentally or physically necessarily, right? But conversely, we have to recognize that even in our OA literature, it talks about moving towards a healthy weight. Whatever that is, none of my business. Absolutely none of my business. That's between you and your higher power, the higher power of your own understanding. Speaking of which, with the higher power, I don't think anyone's fallen asleep yet, but it's still early, right? Can happen. It'll probably happen, right? And Liz, you help me to keep a look at the time, because I'll just keep going. We have another 3 hours, so not really. Okay, I know you're like, yeah, you'll be here yourself, sir. Good sir. Okay, so what I wanted to focus on for a moment is in Bill's story, because most of us from the early, when the program began, and even when Roseanne and our early pioneers started the program, it's rare that people get here with a perfect conception of their higher power and good feelings necessarily with their higher power. And remember, I told you a rabbi, but I also know a priest who died in this disease. I do. I know people that have lovely relationships with a higher power, and nonetheless, they died in their cups, in the food. So, you know, let's look at it. But let's look at Bill's story for a moment, and Ebbie Thatcher. Does everyone hear Ebbie Thatcher? Right? Ebbie Thatcher is the one that carried the message to Bill. And he said, on page 11, he said, "But my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God has done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat." We have to admit complete defeat. There's false pride got in the way for me. Then he had, in effect, been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and this was none at all. That floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. It says, I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. So all that, he sees Ebby, and Ebby, this guy, he used to say, Bill used to say, if I ever get as bad as Ebby, old Ebby, then I'll put down the drink. That's how bad Ebby was. And here's Ebby showing up. You've probably had an Ebby. They show up and they're fresh skinned and glowing, and there's something you can see in their eyes. There's something about their demeanor, right? No hierarchy, no self-anointed ones. Ebby certainly wasn't. He said, but despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me the vestiges, the old tatters of my old prejudice. The word God, ugh. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. I didn't like it very much. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personal to me, this feeling was intensified. Don't you tell me about your God. Where was God when? ... Where was God when I had to steal my dad's cologne? Where was he then? Now, much worse has happened in this world, right? Where was the God then? Don't you tell me about your God. It intensified. See, we it can intensify. In 1935 and 2019, it can intensify. I didn't like the idea, the Scott idea. I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence. I can go for that. Universal mind, spirit of nature. You know, if I'm out in Oregon, and I was out in Montana, the nature, I mean, who could, Purple Mountains majesty. I can go for that. But don't talk to me about some man with a staff judging me up in the sky. Boy, my false pride was so, I didn't know what I didn't know. By the way, I'm not a religious person very much, but I'm spiritual. I just know that there is a God and it's not me. That's all I know. That job is taken. I don't know. I need not apply. He said, but I resisted the thought, just like me, I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his sway might be. His. Ugh. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. And then Ebby says something that was, to me, divine. It was a miracle that he said this. Because this guy didn't stay sober. My eighth sponsor is in the food. He didn't have the goods. Ebby didn't stay sober. Bill did. That's why we're here. Fair? Roseanne? Gamblers Anonymous? Started from the origins history helps me to understand the context of this. He said, my friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. It was a new thing. I hadn't considered it. He said, here's that italics, I think that's that squiggly stuff. He says, why don't you choose your own conception of God? Blasphemy. Right? I get to choose? Huh? That's cool. He said, if it's the rooms, if it's nature, wherever it needs to be, we're not trying to put one over on you. We don't take position on outside issues. We're not for religion. We're not against religion. But at some point, I had to confront the idea, am I willing to believe? Is it possible there may be a power? So I started to think about how I was with my daughter, and I would go through fire for my daughter. And I would do anything for my daughter. And I thought, well, if I had a God of my understanding or whatever word, a higher power, whatever word works, it would be merciful and loving. And I don't, my daughter, I don't always approve of behavior, but I always approve of the human being. She's not chasing after, she's not perfect, but she's not chasing after validation. Thank you, OA. Thank you, OA, God. Thank you that she's not chasing after things. Thank you for the timer. She's not chasing after validation from a man. She's not chasing after validation from anyone. Thank you, OA. Thank you to the 12 steps in this spiritual transformation. You know, I had to open up to a God, to a higher power that was, my higher power is not like the parent trying to catch me doing something wrong. Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. That's not the God of my understanding. God, the God of my understanding, is trying to catch me doing things right. The God of my understanding is merciful. The notion of grace, I don't even mean it from a theological standpoint. You don't know my religion. You don't know that I don't necessarily identify with a particular theology. But I understand the word grace, unearned. I didn't earn this. I just rowed my boat. It wasn't gently down the stream. It wasn't merrily. Like, I just rowed my boat, and I came up on rocks, and then I fell out in the water, and I got water up my nose, and I'm swallowing. Like, but I rowed my boat, and I put the food down, and I was convinced. And then I came to believe. I came over time to believe. And now I know. I don't know for you. I know for me. That's all that's necessary. It's none of my business for you. I just carry a message because I know what God's done for me through these steps, the dance between the work that I do, taking action after action after action after action. That's what this is. It's a practical program of, no, it's a practical program of contemplation and waiting to feel better first. How's that working? If it's working, stick with that plan. If it's working, then the chapter, you know the chapter, into contemplation. Into waiting, into theorizing, into conceptualizing. No, it's into action. In the face of fear. I read a book one time and it was entitled, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Courage. I can't see, what does it say? It says time. Okay, I guess I'm done. So anyways, I want to just finish up by reading page 164 in a chapter called The Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you can't transmit something you do not have or you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And I pass. Thank you.